having a brilliant day today. It is Wednesday, isn't it? I'm properly confused about this week. The bank holiday has just messed me up royally. But there you go. So tonight we are going to be talking about stalking. We are defining it. We are exploring it. We are sharing personal stories. We're going to have an MP on the show. We're going to have a representative from the Crown Prosecution Service. We're going to be talking about what you can do. If you are listening to this and you have someone in your life, it might be someone you know. It might be an ex. It might be someone that messages you on social media. It might be someone that is generally causing you to alter your behavior. Then you might indeed be a victim of stalking. There's a report out recently that suggested that many people who are stalked have 100 incidents, which could be seen as minor incidents, before they pick up the phone and call the police. 100 minor incidents before they themselves will take that action and call the police. So tonight we're asking if we are failing to take stalking seriously. I want to hear from you on this. You can get in touch with me on 81869. You can tweet at BBC Asian Network. Let's hear from someone.
He followed me home on a motorbike and just grabbed a hold of me getting out of the car. Of course, I didn't know it was him because I didn't know he had a motorbike. It was horrendous. It was, I was looking over my shoulder. He threatened to get me while I was walking my dogs. He followed me when I was in the car and he came over to the car and he tried to open the door and he smashed my wing mirror.
Smashed her wing mirror. That is Elena, and we will be hearing more from her in a little bit. I do want to hear from you. Get in touch with me. And of course, on this show, it's all about those real conversations. So you might hear language which could offend. If you're likely to be offended, maybe go to the BBC Sounds app and listen to something else. But I really hope you'll stick around. We are talking about stalking, defining it, working out how and why it happens, and really looking for solutions as well. Looking at how it can be taken more seriously, what we can do, how we can report it, how we can help people who go through that kind of experience. I want to hear from you. So you can text me on 81869. You can tweet at BBC Asian Network. I'm really pleased now to be joined by Zoe Dromefield, who was stalked and harassed by her ex-boyfriend. She never believed it would get to the stage of actually being physically hurt. Zoe, can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
Zoe, welcome to the Asian Network. I can hear you loud and clear. Where in the world are you?
I'm currently on holiday in Ibiza.
You're on holiday. Well, I really appreciate you allowing us to interrupt your holiday. But I think it's so important that people hear about these kinds of experiences. So tell me, in terms of your relationship and in terms of how it turned into stalking, how did that happen? Was it over a long period?
No, so I'd been in the relationship for just over a year and I was trying to end the relationship. The person I met was not the person who he had become. He was gradually changing and becoming the monster that he ended up to be, actually. I mean, he was presenting all these different behaviours, you know, drinking, his behaviour towards me and the children was becoming unbearable. I was trying to end the relationship and that's when the stalking started. At that point, he was then calling me and contacting me on every platform available to him. So WhatsApp, Facebook, email, leaving me voicemails. And it just became unbearable, to be honest.
So by that point, did you just want to not have contact with him, but he was contacting you on all these, it sounds like, online platforms?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what happened was, you know, to begin with, it was kind of like, you know, I was trying to reason with him, but then it got to the point of I couldn't conduct my life. I was working from home. He was turning up at my house. He was calling me hundreds of times a day. So I said, you know, I'm going to call the police. He was then threatening, saying, if I come around, I'm going to come through the door if you don't open it. And, you know, all the while I was contacting the police and actually one of the occasions he left a voicemail saying that he was killing himself. And, you know, I now know that that's a massive red flag and it's a prerequisite to homicide. So, you know, I was in a huge amount of danger that I didn't realise.
It just sounds terrifying. And at that point, when did you make the decision to actually pick up the phone and report it? Was it quite early on or did you wait for a lot of stuff to happen?
I mean, lots of stuff was happening and my life was having to change to accommodate his behaviour until I started to report. When I was reporting, I was just exasperated actually with the police response, because it wasn't great at that time. You know, they were kind of minimizing, saying, well, he hasn't really done anything. So I kind of felt like a sitting duck, because actually he was making all of these threats, but until he actually carried that out, then they were saying they couldn't do anything. And, you know, that's why in the end I ended up thinking, well, I'll just go meet him and talk some sense into him. I now know you can't do that with a person of that kind of personality behaviour. And, you know, it almost ended in murder.
Zoe, so you actually went to meet him?
Yeah.
And did things get violent?
I went to meet him. I went to meet him and we had dinner and we spoke. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'd had a couple of glasses of wine. My guard was down and he was saying, look, I've got this new job. I want to show the emails, da, da, da. All the usual, I'm sorry. It wasn't that way. And, you know, you kind of, your guard comes down, even though I was still annoyed and I was still furious at what had gone on. You know, he'd smashed my door previously to this. Mm-hmm. The police had been involved. But I had said to him, you know, look, this doesn't mean that the relationship just switches back on again. It isn't like that. And we'd gone back to mine to look at these emails. And the end of the evening, I'd gone to bed thinking, you know, he'll either let himself out or he'll sleep on the sofa. No, I was woken to the thuds to my head, and that was when he was attacking me. And
you actually were attacked. I'm so sorry, Zoe. This is horrible for you to have to talk about this. When you then reached out for the police, what happened? Was he convicted?
So he was, I mean, I tried to make a 999 call that night. He took my mobile off me. The attack actually went over a period of 8 hours. He'd taken my mobile. I'd managed to get down the stairs because I was in the loft room. I'd managed to get down the stairs and get the landline, press 999, but actually that call never connected. He'd marched me back upstairs and I was saying to him, you know, I'm dying, Jason. Get me an ambulance. I'm dying. And he actually did call the ambulance. So, I mean, had he not have done that, I don't know. But there's a 13-minute call with me pleading with him for my life. And, you know, obviously they'd heard the call and me in the background. So they came with the police. And he was arrested at the scene. And I spent the next 2 weeks in hospital.
Wow. So after that, what was the court procedure like? And did you feel at that point you got the support that was needed from the police, from the prosecution service, from the legal system? Were you taken seriously?
Yeah, I mean, it was only at that point that actually I have to say that I feel like I was taken seriously. I had the odd comments that weren't great. And I think there is a very bad culture within our services, not necessarily just the police, but I think across the whole board. And I think that's the social culture as well. You know, it's kind of still minimized that if violence happens in a relationship, well, you know, it's just seen as a domestic. And, you know, actually, if he'd have been a stranger and stepped into my house and done that exact same thing, it would be given a whole different context. So, and I don't understand why it's kind of minimized when you're in a relationship. It's actually more frightening.
Right. So you think it was seen and perceived and treated differently because it was someone you knew and someone you'd perhaps been in a relationship with?
100%, yeah.
Right.
And I do think we still have this perception that it's okay to be in a relationship and, you know, you have an argument. You know, look, kids are brought up and they're... And my children, I've got a son who's 14 now and my daughter who's 9, nearly 10 now. I mean, they don't put hands on each other and growing up. But I remember me growing up with my stepsisters and brothers, and, you know, fighting and whatever else. And I think it's kind of like a culture that's ingrained. It's not okay, you know, but... In my generation, it was kind of okay for brothers and sisters to fight. And I just think it's not okay to put your hands on someone else.
It's
really
absolutely
isn't.
Not okay. So no. just finally, what I want to get to tonight, one of the things we're trying to do is understand as well that kind of how and when, at what point you can define stalking. Because it sounds like for you, there were these... he was contacting you and you used this phrase, you said you were changing your behaviour. And what I want to know is, for you personally, when did the penny drop? When did you think this had gone beyond an annoyance and someone being inappropriate and someone not being nice to it being stalking?
It's persistent and wanted behaviour. So if you are categorically telling, you know, it started off with me saying, right, please stop calling me at all of, you know, the amount of times that you are. But it would then escalate and he was contacting me and I was, you know, in the end I had to say, look, I am going to have to call the police. This is beyond normal behaviour. Because it was just completely enveloping my entire world. You know, I just wasn't being able to conduct my life. It's persistent, unwanted, you know, behaviour. Basically.
Zoe, I'm really glad you're in a better place now. And thank you so much for sharing your story. I know it must be, it is a really difficult thing to talk about. Of course it is, but I really, really appreciate you sharing that. So thank you for your time, Zoe. Take care now.
No, thank you for having me.
Thank you, Zoe. If you're at home and you've just heard Zoe's story, maybe there's something in there that you can relate to. Maybe you've had similar experiences. This whole area of defining exactly what stalking is, it's a really difficult thing. And I think, you know, sometimes there is a cultural element to this as well, because I think as desis, often we will say, well, there's certain behaviors that it's the way it is when someone's in a relationship, particularly if the stalking, the attention is coming from someone like it was for Zoe, who she had been in a relationship with. You might think that's completely wrong. Whatever you reckon, get in touch with me. You can text me on 81869. You can tweet at BBC Asian Network, and we will be hearing some more personal experiences in a moment. We are talking about stalking tonight, and you can still get in touch with me on 81869, tweet at BBC Asian Network. We heard from Zoe just now, who was sharing her experience, and a little bit earlier, I spoke to someone else with very personal experience of stalking. I spoke to Elena, and I asked her about what she'd been through. And once again, just like Zoe, her stalker, it wasn't a complete stranger. It was someone that she had known. This is what Elena had to tell me.
I was with my soon-to-be ex-husband, and unfortunately, things were going quite bad. He was quite violent and a bully and quite abusive, and I made the decision eventually to leave, which I did in the September. Once I left him and he realised I wasn't going to go back, he became quite nasty and was ringing me up at work. He messaged me all the time, coming to my parents' house, and just I ended up having to warn him that I would go to the police and get a molestation order.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't take too kindly to that, but eventually I did get the non-molestation order quite quickly, and then he just went on to breach it and he became again nasty, and he just, there was a tirade of constant stalking, which eventually the police reacted on, and last March he got convicted.
Elena, I just want to go back a little bit, because on the show we've been talking about how sometimes it can be kind of difficult to define that line that is, you know, when is someone doing something that's inappropriate and when does it go on to be fully fledged stalking? And in your case, it was someone you knew, it was your ex-husband. So when did the kind of penny drop? When did you think, okay, this is something that I have to take really seriously and this is not acceptable?
It wasn't acceptable, our relationship, when he became violent, but straight away when he was, I was saying to him, leave me alone on any time, and he just, you know, was constant, and then it was where he was ringing me and messaging me. I was working for the NHS at the time,
mm-hmm.
and he was doing just totally bizarre things, saying he wanted me back to other people, but then ringing my work saying, oh, she's a violent alcoholic, ringing up, applying for a job there. And when he didn't get through, he was ringing up recruitment saying, is it because of my ex-wife? You know, she takes cocaine. And then he was actually, he followed me home on a motorbike and just grabbed a hold of me getting out of the car. Of course, I didn't know it was him because I didn't know he had a motorbike.
Elena, it sounds terrifying.
It was horrendous. I was looking over my shoulder. He threatened to get me while I was walking my dogs. He followed me when I was in the car and he had his daughter with him. I thought, well, he won't do anything with his daughter there, which I was wrong. He ran me off the road, came towards the car. I had to lock it and he tried to open the door and he smashed my wing mirror. It was just terrifying, everything. You know, everything I was doing, I was thinking, is it him? Is he following me here? He was putting stuff on Facebook. He used to be a police officer and he had a cartoon pig
somewhere on WhatsApp with my caller number on. So I reported that to the police.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, he was in a local gym where I used to go, and an off-duty police officer saw him, and he was actually wearing a T-shirt with that print on.
God, so he got that put on a T-shirt just to kind of torment you, I guess.
Yeah, he did. And I mean, I didn't know about it. It was an off-duty police officer that reported it. And along with everything he was doing, obviously, they put it together and told me about it. And I was absolutely mortified. I thought, what is wrong with the man? Why is he doing this to me?
Of course.
You know, saying he loves me and then he's been violent, he's following me. It was just horrendous.
Elena, when did you decide to get the police involved? Was that quite early on? And how helpful were the police?
I got them involved when I decided I was going to leave and everything had sort of come to a head. It was a promise I'd made to myself and a friend that I would ring the police. I'd never rang them before, you know, I could have. But, and then I rang them even more about various things, the harassment. And I got the non-molestation order, so that obviously that was a good tool to them. But then he started doing the minor things, like putting the picture of the pig on, and well, it's not direct threatening you. And the police were a bit slow on the uptake until they obviously got all the incidents together, and an officer came to see me and said, "Look, Elena, we think he's stalking you." And I said, "Well, I think he is as well." You know, when they were like, "Well, we've got real concerns for your safety," and I had alarms put on the house. And then it went worse. You know, he's smashed. I bought a brand new car, and Christmas Eve I come out, and it was all smashed up. I had no evidence it was him, but it couldn't have been anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And then the police, like I say, the police became very supportive once they knew that it was stalking. And it was something every weekend when I was off work.
It must have been incredibly stressful.
Yeah, I mean, I ended up where I was, I didn't want to go out of the house, and I was scared to walk my dogs, and I got diagnosed with post-traumatic stress syndrome in the end, which, you know, I was having panic attacks, I couldn't mm-hmm. sleep, I was waking up screaming, thinking he was attacking me. It was horrible. I still have that now, but it's not as frequent.
So from the process of contacting the police to the point of getting a conviction, what was that process like? Was it difficult?
Sometimes it was, because there wasn't half the evidence that he had done something. But all the little things that I kept reporting added up, so they did have enough evidence to take it to the Crown Prosecution Service, who then took it further to, it was Durham Crown Court, and he pleaded guilty to a lesser charge of harassment, but he got a suspended prison sentence, and I got the 5-year restraining order.
Right, so he pled guilty to harassment, and you got a 5-year restraining order. How long did the whole process take?
About 4 or 5 months, to be honest. It was quite quickly once they got the gathered the evidence over the short period of time he was committing the offences.
That's still a long period of time to kind of face that kind of stress, isn't it? I mean, if someone is listening to this and they are going through something similar, perhaps they're at the start of it, what kind of advice would you have for them?
Just to make sure that they report everything. Even little tiny things, like some, you know, they think someone's watching them outside. It may not be him. They may be being paranoid, but they probably aren't. And people like that are unpredictable. You know, I didn't realise how unpredictable he was. And just to keep calm as you can, just report everything.
One more question. Was there any time where you thought the police didn't take it entirely seriously, or, you know, the police could have been more helpful or could have done more?
A little bit, really, when he was making up stupid allegations against me and became sporting about it, and I was quite annoyed. I thought, well, you're speaking to me quicker than you came to see me when I was reporting things about him.
So you felt, even though you were the victim, you were sometimes being treated as a possible kind of transgressor, as if you'd done something wrong. And
yeah, because he said that I'd stolen a guitar from his house, from our house, and I was like, well, hang on a minute, you're saying we can't argue over property, yet you know, he's still got a lot of my clothing to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't report that as a theft, but he can report a guitar, which I bought him, as theft when I hadn't even took it and he'd sold it on the internet.
That was Elena's story there. This is Mubinazar. I'm going to be with you till 12 o'clock. And tonight we are talking about stalking. I'm so glad Elena shared her story there. I want to introduce Meera Narendra now, who writes for Galden magazine. Meera, welcome to the Asian Network. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Are you okay? Oh, it'd be good if I turned your mic up. How are you doing, Meera?
I'm good, thank you.
There
how
we
you?
Go. She's in the house.
Yes.
There we go. Meera, when you hear Elena's story,
yeah.
Does it sound familiar? Because one thing that really stuck out to me is with Elena and with Zoe, who yeah. we heard from earlier, there seemed to be a process whereby they were struggling, particularly at the start, to define
yeah.
what stalking was. Yeah. You know, it's a bit persistent, or someone's messaging me yeah. when I don't want them to message me.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the other thing that they've both got in common is that they knew the person.
Yeah.
Do you think that's common?
Yeah, definitely. Because you feel like when people think stalking, people think, oh, it's that stranger down the road. He's wearing the cape and he's thinking, or she's staring at you from the window. But the reality is stalking happens to people that, you know, the perpetrators are people normally, you know, like your boyfriends, your ex-boyfriends, you know, foes and stuff like that. And the truth is, when that happens, you don't know if that's stalking. You just think, are they annoying you? And I think that's what the problem is now. And people struggle to realise that they're victims of stalking and cyberstalking. It's something that should be talked about more, and hopefully stuff will change.
There was one report that came out a little while ago that suggested that many people that deal with stalking will have 100 separate incidents that they experience and deal with before they will make any kind of formal complaint, before they'll contact the police, for example. Do you think that's common?
That's very common. I think from my friends alone, I think I know a handful, which is actually quite scary, a handful of people I know that have been stalked, and really, I'm scared. Like, I don't know what to expect anymore. And you don't think, oh, him knocking, him phoning you all the time, message you from different social media, you wouldn't think, oh, that's nothing. You just think it's a persistent guy or persistent girl. But the reality is, that's stalking, and people don't know when to go to the police or when to report it, because there's no strict sort of legislation, no strict rules on when it actually counts as stalking. And that's just the truth.
And it can differ from person to person, and it differs in terms of how individuals define
yeah,
it, I guess.
Some people get lots and lots of gifts and you think, oh, just, you know, nice shirt or nice flowers at your door. You don't realise that's stalking when, you know, it happens all the time. You think he's just giving you a gift, but that's stalking. It's persistent behaviour that you didn't ask for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that.
Absolutely. So Meera, I know you've written about this, haven't you? So we'll be hearing more about what you've written about and the research you did when you were writing the article. So we'll hear from more from Meera in a little bit. And after 11, we'll also be hearing from Rachel Horman, who is a lawyer that specializes in stalking cases. If you're at home listening to this and you want to share your experiences, if you've got a particular perspective on this, whatever your perspective, I want to hear from you. Get in touch with me on 81869. You can tweet at BBC Asia Network. We are talking about stalking tonight. It's just coming up to 11 o'clock. Tonight we are talking about stalking, and I've got Meera Narendra with me, who writes for Galden magazine, is a journalist, and also writes for Data Protection World Forum. And also just by the by, has a degree in criminology and a master's in cybercrime as well, just to throw that in. And now we're joined down the line by Rachel Horman, who is a lawyer that specialises in stalking cases and is the chair of Paladin, a national stalking advocacy service. Rachel, welcome to the Asian Network.
Thank you.
We have been hearing from some very personal perspective today, and there seems to be this theme about different definitions of stalking in different contexts. Legally, how do we define what stalking is?
Well, the legislation specifically doesn't define stalking, and that's because it can be very different for each person. And if the legislation was to give a list of behaviours, somebody would just think of something that wasn't on the list and use that. So it tends to be behaviour that is causing distress to that person, which would be obvious to another person that it would cause them distress. That's actually within the legislation, and that's an aggravating feature of it. But it isn't defined, because as soon as you do, somebody will think of something beyond that.
Do you think the language around stalking, Meera, I know you've written about this as well, is the language around stalking something that is is difficult? Is it problematic when it comes to us then being able to make that leap and being able to report? Mira, tell me what you think.
Yes, because people, like I said before, people think stalking is, you know, the crazy guy, but it's not. And you know, people with social media now, everyone uses social media, everyone's lives on there, and, you know, people will stalk their ex because they can stalk their ex, they can see what they're doing, and that's stalking. But people don't realize it because it's classed as social media stalking. Oh, I'm just looking what he's done on his own profile. I know girls that have made like a fake account purely to stalk people or to stalk you know, exes or anyone in their life that used to be in their life. And when you think about it, when you actually deep it, that's so creepy, because if it was a guy doing that to a, you know, a girl, that's extremely creepy. But for them, it's because they're just stalking their friend. And that's the difference, because there isn't no terminology. There's no definite legislation on it. And if there was, then it'd be different.
Absolutely. And Rachel, you know, in that context, we've heard a lot this evening about the use of the internet, people getting messages consistently on particular platforms. Do you think the law and the legal system is at a place where we have caught up and we adequately respond to that and take it as seriously as it needs to be taken?
I think the legislation is there, but I don't think the criminal justice system is there. And this is one of the problems. We have got the legislation there, but the police and the CPS and then even the judges are just not seeing how serious this is. The police are not reacting very well when people report it. On average, a victim will have experienced 100 incidents before they even pick up the phone. Yet 9 times out of 10 when they do, they're told that they haven't suffered enough, basically. They're met with almost an attitude of disbelief by the police, in my experience, the majority of the time. And whilst there are examples of good practice, far too often the police are turning people away, and victims end up having to investigate their own crimes and provide concrete evidence to the police before they'll even take a statement from the victim. And that's just not good enough.
So it seems like the burden of proof at that point, or the burden that of being able to prove that something is going wrong, that there is any stalking taking place, is on the person that's experiencing it, is the person that's going through it. That doesn't entirely seem fair or just or right, does it? Because if you are going through something like that and you are altering your behavior because of the way someone else is treating you, then perhaps you're not going to be in that frame of mind. I mean, we heard from Zoe earlier, and she said initially the police didn't take her complaints seriously. In the cases you deal with, is that a common theme?
Very common. Virtually every case I deal with, that is a feature. And that is why people come to me. That is why people go to speak to Paladin, the National Stalking Advocacy Service. We shouldn't need to exist, because when people report it, the police should just take it from there, gather the evidence, investigate. And with all the cyber stalking that's going on, which is there in nearly every case I deal with, the evidence is there in black and white. If the police could be bothered or had the resources to actually obtain that, prosecution should be easy. But unfortunately, that isn't the case. And the successes really are in the minority.
What do we know about prosecution rates?
That they are way too low. Mm-hmm. And that whilst the you know, rate of reports to the police is increasing, not because I think stalking is becoming more common, just because people are realising that this is illegal and I can actually do something about it, the rate of prosecutions is nowhere near, and in fact has been decreasing in some areas, which is awful. And we've heard already on the show about, you know, the Crown Prosecution Service accepting pleas to lesser charges like harassment. Harassment is not stalking. There's a massive difference between the two. Stalking is about obsession and fixation and needs to be treated very differently. And if you end up convicting somebody of harassment, that sends a very different message. If I came across somebody with a conviction for harassment, I wouldn't be as concerned about them as I would be with somebody with a conviction for stalking. So I think it's really important that we deal with with this seriously, because these things can escalate. And let's face it, in some cases, Zoe's case was very serious. She's lucky to be alive. I know Zoe. Mm-hmm. In other cases, women in particular are raped and murdered by these stalkers. And we have all of these opportunities to stop these murders. And it seems that we're just not doing that. And that isn't improving. And unfortunately, women are dying because of this.
I hear that, Rachel. I just want to read a message out. Of course, you can get in touch with us. 81869 tweet at BBC Asian Network. Someone's got in touch specifically in regards to Zoe, and they've said, no disrespect to this lady, but I feel and believe that this is a one-sided story. If they both lived together and loved each other to start with, then there must be something from her, brackets Zoe, that may have triggered it from him to change that much. Sometimes women have expectations of something, like, and it's like living in cloud cuckoo land. But when responsibility gets to both of you, things change, and women don't like that most of the time. Now, I'm reading this because I think it highlights a real problem. Yeah. It highlights an issue in terms of how we, as a society and culturally, how we view these issues. And my question to you, Mira's sitting in front of me with her mouth open. My question to you, Mira, is, you know, the person that's, I appreciate this person getting in touch with us. I absolutely don't agree with the sentiment, and I think the sentiment is ridiculous, frankly. But Mira, what I want to know is from you, do you think that's just a male perspective or a particular perspective, or do you think there's a cultural element in that? And when I say cultural element, I'm talking about as South Asians, as British Asians, as they sees. Tell me what you think.
Okay, I'm in utter shock because I think there must be a cultural element to it, or it's a combination of a male perspective and a cultural element. Because, for one, okay, you don't know the other side of the story, but what possesses someone to go to the extent, it's not because of her. That was that guy's free, that's his free choice he's done to go and do that. So for someone to say that actually, you know, she must have acted a bit crazy for him to start stalking her, that's absolutely wrong. At the end of the day, it victimizes her more. So why should more victims come forward? This doesn't solve the problem at all. People need to start to comprehend that although, you know, she may, who knows what her, the other side of the story is, but whatever happens, he decided to stalk her, he decided to harass her, physically assault her, and go to the scream. It wasn't because of her. And that is why victims don't come forward.
That's why they don't come forward. There's a definite element of victim blaming there. Definitely. Rachel, in your work, do you see people that are experiencing the stalking being blamed, yes, or fingers being pointed, and the suggestion that perhaps they have done something to encourage this behaviour?
Yes, all the time. And I think that is one of the problems. And I think, to me, there is an issue within the police of kind of institutional misogyny. And whilst that may sound extreme, I've spoken to several senior police officers who've actually agreed with me on this topic. And when we look at the types of crimes that aren't taken seriously by the police, things like stalking, domestic violence, rape, child abuse, these are all offences which affect women predominantly more than men. And I think that is one of the reasons why this crime isn't taken very seriously at all. And we always look in society to blame women for whatever happens to them. And, you know, in Zoe's case, she was almost murdered by that man who had a history of stalking multiple women. So, you know, how anyone can blame somebody in that situation highlights the whole problem with society.
Mm-hmm. It's a structural problem. And Rachel, just briefly, if someone is listening and they are going through something at the moment, and, you know, maybe they can relate to Zoe or Elena, but maybe in their own experience, it hasn't got to that extent yet. Maybe it's just messages on a social media. And I say just, but what I mean is maybe it's the thin end of the wedge. Mm-hmm. What is the appropriate action to take?
Well, to take it seriously, because these things can and often do escalate. So what I would say is gather the evidence, screenshot it so that you've stored that evidence, report it to the police, even if you don't feel that you are being given a very good service. Don't stop reporting it, and please contact Paladin, the National Stalking Advocacy Service, who will be able to help you and do a safety plan with you. And if you are high risk, they will advocate on your behalf. It's a great service, but it does really need to be taken seriously, and victims need to tell people around them what's happening so that those other people can be the eyes and the ears, because a stalker will contact on average 21 other people around the victim. So the more people that know, the better.
The better. Rachel, stick with us. I want to continue this conversation in a little bit as well. We'll be hearing from Joanna Coleman from the CPS. She's the CPS lead on stalking. I spoke to her a little while ago. There was some disagreement on the figures, so I'd be really interested, Rachel, to hear what you've got to say about convictions, because Joanna suggested that there'd been an improvement in prosecution rates, whereas I think Home Office figures show that isn't the case. But it'd be interesting to get your view on that, Rachel. And Mira, we will continue talking about your writing, and I want to get into some of the cases that you've written about as well. We will continue this. We are talking about stalking. Get in touch with me on 81869 tweet at BBC Asian Network.
Asian Network.
Mabeen Azhar.
We are talking about stalking tonight. I'm really pleased. I've got Mira with me, and I've got Rachel Horman as well, who's a lawyer that specialises in stalking cases. Mira, I know you have written about this subject for Galden magazine,
yep.
And you kind of processed and did your research with a specific case. It was a friend of yours who, for the purposes of tonight, we are going to refer to as Priya.
Yeah,
we'll call them Priya. Tell me, in the broadest terms possible, because I know it didn't result in conviction.
Yeah.
So without naming any names, what was Priya's experience?
She basically had met someone online who lived on the other side of the world, and obviously it started off as a friendship, became a relationship, and she ended up falling in love with him, but he started getting jealous of the fact that she was doing really well in her life. She was getting money, she lived on her own, and he started controlling her life in every aspect, calling her phone till her phone dies, making a Snapchat her every single minute while she's at work. And he wanted her to schedule her life around him. Bear in mind, he's on the other side of the world, which is a good 12 hours away.
Mira, had they actually met?
I believe they met they met a couple of times, and it was after the cyber stalking had occurred. And it became into physical assault, sexual assaults. And for her, she never saw it because she was so in love with him. And that was a key thing that really triggered me when she told me, was that she just didn't realise how bad it was. It wasn't until he basically nearly killed her that she came back to the UK and realised, actually, he doesn't know where I live. He lives on the other side of the world. She can just sort of block him, and hopefully he doesn't contact her. And he did contact her a couple of times until he got the picture. But what's really scary is her life was going spiraling out of control. She was getting depressed. She was, you know, it affects you mentally, socially, physically, affecting your health. This guy is contacting her every single day. It's scary.
It sounds like she was massively vulnerable, and that was just exploited. Did she get any kind of help? Did she even reach out for help?
From what I remember, she didn't get any help. She just had to rely on her friends and just hope that they were fine. Obviously, she relied on me. And now I know she's so much better. It has affected her future relationships. She's told me that personally. But now she's growing. She's starting to trust people. But she's just never... She just says you never know what people are like. You think that you know someone, but it isn't until you find out the darkest thing they do that, you know, you truly know someone. She thought she could trust him. And this guy nearly murdered her. You know, that's scary.
Mira, thanks for sharing that. Rachel, I want to bring you in. You know, in this particular case, we're hearing about someone who sounds like they were cyber stalked by someone who didn't even live in the UK. So UK legislation, UK jurisdiction, I'm guessing in that context, it wouldn't apply. What could someone in that position really do?
It is much more difficult when the offences are taking place abroad. It is possible to get some types of protective orders which are enforceable abroad. I'm not saying that it's easy, but I do think that this is something that needs to be looked at and improvements made, because this is an increasing problem. People are meeting partners and, you know, over the internet from all over the world. So, you know, this is something I think that does need to be looked at.
Completely, especially in a world where we are kind of continually and increasingly connected to one another. Rachel, I want to hear your opinion on the chat I had earlier with Joanna Coleman. She's from the CPS. She is the CPS lead on stalking and harassment. And I started by asking her about her job. This is what she had to say.
Well, I'm a Deputy Chief Crown Prosecutor, and I cover the area of Thames and Chiltern, but I take a national lead for stalking and harassment. So when we work closely with the police on a particular issue or a particular subject area, it's always useful to have a joined-up approach and to have one single point of contact who can lead for the, you know, a national organisation with another national organisation, points of policy and any improvements, etc., that need to be made.
So, Joanna, there have been a number of high-profile cases right now. Do you think those cases are illustrating the failures of the CPS when it comes to stalking?
No, I don't think those cases illustrate the failures of the CPS, and I wouldn't want a few high-profile cases that may not be successful to put other victims of stalking off from reporting, because that would be really dangerous. We want victims to feel confident about reporting. Everyone has a right to feel safe at home, at work, on the way to school to pick their children up, and it would be very damaging if a few high-profile cases put victims off from reporting. Ultimately, we have some pretty good figures showing that the increase in prosecutions for stalking offences is quite considerable. So there was a rise of 68.5% of stalking prosecutions in 2017-18 as compared to 2016-17. Now that's quite a significant rise and shows that we are being able to successfully prosecute a significant number of cases. Unfortunately, it's often the bad news cases that hit the press. But as I say, it would be very dangerous for that to put off victims of stalking who need police assistance, who need cases to be prosecuted because of the results of a few bad cases.
Of course, but do you... I appreciate that, Joanna, but do you understand in a case, you know, the Shanna Grice case, for example, where you have someone that is fined for wasting police time after reporting stalking, you see why that would make people very nervous about coming forward and about reporting.
Absolutely, I can see why that would be the case. But I think things have moved on considerably and are moving on considerably with the joint working now between the police and the CPS. The protocol that was put in place in May of last year, it certainly guides investigators and guides prosecutors to build cases for stalking and makes the police have a different approach to how they investigate these offences. So I don't think, you know, picking out a couple of cases that are newsworthy because they haven't been successful is particularly helpful to victims who may be reluctant to report in any event and will become more reluctant to report if they feel that their case isn't going to be taken seriously. I can tell you that it will be taken seriously both by the police and by prosecutors. And there's a real commitment to bring perpetrators to justice when, you know, victims are the subject of stalking in a situation like that.
What are some of the problems with bringing these cases to prosecution? Because you referenced an increase in prosecutions in the year 2017 to 2018, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right? There was a report out, though, that suggested that the percentage of prosecutions for 2014 and 2015 was far higher. It was about 49% prosecution rate, where that figure plunged in the following year to 32%. And for 2015-2016, it was actually at 30%. So you might have made an increase in the period 2017 to 2018, but there was a significant decrease in the years before that. So what are the factors leading to this decrease and now increase in prosecutions?
Yeah, I wouldn't say there is a decrease. I don't know the figures that you're referring to now. I don't have those in front of me, I'm afraid. But I would.
They were from the Home Office.
Okay, well, the Home Office data and CPS data doesn't always match up, so that you can't compare like for like. The data I'm referring to is CPS data, and we have the highest number of prosecutions for stalking offences in the year 2017 to 2018. So you're comparing different data to the data I'm talking about, which obviously makes it very difficult to have a meaningful conversation about it.
This is probably quite useful. The Home Office at the time said there was still more to be done and it would work with the police and the CPS and other professionals to improve responses and give better protection to victims. And of course, you know, that's what everyone wants. So what I'm really asking you is, how is the CPS now giving better protection to victims?
I would say the CPS and the police are giving better protection to victims by a different approach to the way these cases are investigated. Previously, cases that probably should have been prosecuted as stalking, I think there is no doubt in saying, were prosecuted as harassment cases. The level of protection for a victim and the level of sentencing options available to a court are less for a harassment case than for a stalking case. What the protocol does is states that all cases should be investigated and reviewed at the outset as a stalking case and to try and build a case as a stalking case rather than a harassment case. Obviously, not all cases will proceed as stalking because it will depend on the evidence that's available, but we have seen a significant increase since the protocol was put in place in the number of cases that have been prosecuted as stalking. And so I think one of the main approaches and one of the main differences is this protocol. It's joint working between the police and the CPS. There's been a significant amount of training also, both for officers and for prosecutors, around the stalking legislation, around restraining order legislation, to raise awareness of all involved in dealing with this, you know, very difficult area of work. So I would say all of that is what is improving the number of cases that we are able to prosecute.
And Joanna, if someone was listening to this and they're going through something, perhaps it's something where they're not really sure how it can be defined or what action would be taken, what would you suggest they do?
I would suggest they report the matter to the police in any event. Victims have a right to feel safe in their own homes, at work, on the way to school to pick their children up, when they're socialising. And if somebody is changing their life in any way, the likelihood is they are being stalked. So I would say anybody who is feeling that they are in a position either of being stalked or harassed, but if you're changing your life and you're making, you know, modifications to the way you would normally live, the chances are you are being stalked. So I would say go to the police. Report the offence. There are lots of available support networks as well. There's the National Stalking Helpline, there's Paladin. There are third-party reporting centres that can help you report a matter to the police if you're not comfortable with going to the police direct yourself. So I would encourage everybody who is feeling that they may be in that position not to delay reporting, but to report via a third party or direct to the police and have that case investigated, because we know that these cases can turn extraordinarily serious, and I wouldn't want anybody to not report and find themselves seriously injured or worse because they haven't reported an offence.
Joanna Coleman there, who is the CPS's lead on stalking. Rachel, when you hear that, you know, I think it's important. I don't want to pit people against each other for the sake of it. I think everyone here is talking, and we're having this discussion for the same reasons, which are people who experience stalking need support, and there needs to be more of that support. There was a disagreement there in that conversation with Joanna about conviction rates and prosecutions, rather, where Joanna said, well, the CPS figures show there's been an increase. Home Office figures show that historically, actually, there's been a decrease in recent years. What are the facts around that as you see them?
My understanding is that there had been a decrease, and that whilst there'd been a huge increase in the number of people reporting stalking as a proportion of those that were prosecuted, there had been a decrease there. So that is still my understanding.
And in your view, from a legal perspective, what are some of the reasons for that? Why has there been a decrease?
I think that it's just been a very bad service, and it's a decrease possibly because there's been a huge increase in the amount of people coming forward to report it. There was an investigation in 2017 by the Inspectorate of Constabulary and also the Inspectorate for the CPS, and they concluded that the service that was being given was way off target, and that victims were being failed time and time again by the CPS. So even if there has been an improvement, we're talking an improvement from a very low bar, and victims are still being failed, in my view. Victims are still coming away from court very upset, telling me that the CPS have accepted a plea bargain down to harassment or even less, and that the CPS are still advising the police that, you know, there should be no charges. So, you know, if there has been an increase, great, but we're still nowhere near where we need to be to help victims and to save lives.
We've still got a long way to go. We're going to wrap this up in a moment, but Mira, I want to ask you first, and then Rachel, if I could ask you the same question. Mira, if there are people listening, and as a Desi, as a South Asian, I would like you to bring in a cultural aspect as well. A lot of our listeners are South Asian. What can we do? And I'm talking about people who may feel that something inappropriate is happening. Maybe using that yardstick, you know, we heard earlier about altering your behavior. If you are altering your behavior, then perhaps you should consider that something is not right here. What should people do?
As victims?
Yes. What is the right action to take?
So sometimes you just don't know. You just don't recognize it. But if you feel in your true self, and I think it's when people outside start to notice the difference in behavior, then that's when you should start to think and maybe start noting it down. And just remember, like, you're not, like, you may think what he's doing is normal, what he or she may be doing is normal, but it's not. And you need to acknowledge it, and you should start recording evidence. You should start doing as much as you can and report it. And that's the main thing to do. And from the Desi thing, you need to talk about it more. People need to be educated more, even in the South Asian community and from all communities, especially in the South Asian community. As Priya was South Asian, she felt like she couldn't do anything. She felt like she couldn't go to her mum purely out the fact that her mum will be like, why are you talking to this guy? Just block him. We can't block him. He'll make another account and attack you at the same time.
Mm.
So that would be the main thing. And like I said, once your friends and family start noticing a difference in you, I know it's hard to accept that you're a victim. It's hard to accept that you've changed, but it's just something deep down. It's one day it'll click and you'll know you're a victim from there.
So just make sure you speak to people.
Yeah, speak
even if
to
it
people.
Means kind of breaking a boundary, you know, tackling a stigma, have that conversation.
Yeah, if you feel embarrassed by it, don't feel embarrassed by it. You just have to speak to people because you're going to become more of a victim.
Thank you, Mira. And Rachel, is there anything you can add to that?
Yes, I mean, obviously, contact Paladin. They will do a bespoke safety plan with you because every case is different. And I don't want to give away some of the tips that we give to clients on air. But in general, I would say change your routine because that can really put you at risk. And we are all creatures of habit. So please think about changing your routine.
That's wonderful. Rachel, thank you so much. And Mira, thank you as well. Of course, you can also go to the BBC Action Line page, and there's some links and useful information on there. Around the corner, we will be hearing from Sarah Wollaston MP, who was the sponsor of the Stalking Protection Bill, and she'll be talking about that. Network. We've been talking about stalking tonight, and I want to turn now to the MP, Sarah Wollaston. She is the Change UK MP for a constituency in Devon. And she's also the sponsor of the Stalking Protection Bill, which was actually passed very recently. It was last month, actually. I spoke to her a little bit earlier. This is what she had to say. Sarah, welcome to the Asian Network, and thank you for being
Hi.
With us. Tell me why you decided to push for this new bill, and what does it change? What gap does it aim to fill?
Well, as the point about the Stalking Protection Act is it's not just that it gives really clear penalties for people who are continuing to contact and stalk their victim, but it may also allow what are called positive requirements to be put in place. So in other words, that the court could direct that somebody had a psychiatric opinion and, if necessary and appropriate, attended a treatment program. So it's about not only the sort of things that people mustn't do, which would be obvious, but what sometimes what they must do. And also it won't just cover people who are being stalked from this country. So in other words, if you decided you were going to stalk someone via the internet and you were using an overseas site, you would still be committing an offence if you could be demonstrated that you were breaching a stalking protection order.
So it sounds like it's really genuinely far-reaching.
Yeah, I think far-reaching, but also there will be a reasonableness test here. So I don't think there's going to be an issue with, you know, you've sent someone maybe a couple of tweets and you'll be subject to one of these orders. It would have to be proportionate.
It would have to meet a particular standard.
As I say, it's about, does it pass a reasonableness test? Because these orders have real teeth, and breaching an order would be a criminal offence with serious penalties.
And do you think, in terms of legal services, the CPS, the police, for example, there's been a lot in the press recently about failings, particularly with the police in particular areas. Do you think that's a problem?
Well, I think one of the biggest failings, and the thing that, the Stalking Protection Act will address when it comes into force, is that up till now, the onus has been on victims. Unless they've been like an intimate partner, they've had to take all the action themselves, take out restraining orders and what have you. And the Stalking Protection Act will mean that the police can themselves take action, so they can go to the magistrate's court on behalf of a victim, and they can put in place these protections that will come with the stalking protection orders, and essentially it takes the onus off the victim. The other point about them is that they will require the civil standard of proof to bring an order in place, but breaching one will be a criminal offence with real penalties. So in other words, it's quite easy to prove if somebody is continuing to stalk someone, say through social media, despite having a stalking protection order in place that tells them they've got to stop it. Or it's quite easy to see that someone sent someone repeated texts, or they've been turning up repeatedly outside someone's home,
right,
or harassing their friends and family and so forth.
And that legislation will actually have teeth. It will be enforced.
Yes, that's what we want. And what we're waiting for now is for the Home Office to set out the clear guidance for the police about how they apply this, and to actually bring the Act into force. So it's finished all its Commons and Lords stages. It's received Royal Assent. So it's an Act of Parliament. And now, as I say, it just needs to have a date set for when it comes into legal force.
For when it will actually come in. Sarah, I want to ask you... what inspired you to push forward with this? Obviously, all of us can agree that safety and the perspective of victims of stalking is something that is really important to take seriously. Did you have any personal connection to this area? Have you had any experiences yourself?
Yes, in fact, someone had a conviction only last week and is serving a custodial sentence for death threats to myself and several other MPs and really vile sort of racist threats sent to David Lammy.
Right.
So, but as I say, this legislation was not put in place to protect MPs. This is legislation that's in place, and the police will be, having the discretion to apply a reasonableness test, because it's not about somebody receiving one or two tweets that they maybe don't like. This is about people who are just being contacted and their lives ruined by people turning up, by people constantly contacting them. And the thing about stalkers is they don't just contact their victim, they will very often contact all those around them, their friends, their family, their work colleagues. And it's the difference between this and very many other crimes is it's a crime of persistence and of fixation and obsession. And some victims have described this as a feeling like sort of death in slow motion because of the way it just, they have that sense they can never get away from their stalker. And in many cases, it can also lead to violence as well. So it is a very serious crime, and we needed to have stronger powers also to try and interrupt this pattern of behaviour at an earlier stage, mm-hmm. rather than having to wait for decades and many victims will be putting up with hundreds and hundreds of incidents of this before they even report it, because each individual action on its own can sometimes sound a bit trivial, and you have to see the whole big picture of the impact of it. And so the police will be able to intervene earlier, and it's hoped that that will also head some of this off at the pass before it does become such a deeply ingrained pattern of behaviour. Mobeen
Azhar. He followed me home on a motorbike and just grabbed a hold of me getting out of the car. Of course, I didn't know it was him because I didn't know he had a motorbike. It was horrendous. I was looking over my shoulder. He threatened to get me while I was walking my dogs. He followed me when I was in the car and he came towards the car and he tried to open the door and he smashed my wing mirror.
With social media now, everyone uses social media, everyone's lives on there, people will stalk their ex because they can stalk their ex, they can see what they're doing, and that's stalking, but people don't realise it because it's classed as social media stalking. Oh, I'm just looking what he's done on his own profile. I know girls that have made like a fake account account purely to stalk people.
Gather the evidence, screenshot it so that you've stored that evidence, report it to the police, even if you don't feel that you are being given a very good service. Don't stop reporting it, and please contact Paladin, the National Stalking Advocacy Service.
Well, it is that time right now. There we go. It's that time we call the happy ending. I'm going to leave you tonight. We've been talking about stalking. Whatever you do, if you take something from this, it's speak to someone and keep safe. You know, you can go to the paladinservice.co.uk that we just heard about. You can go to the SusieLamplugh Trust.org. And of course, there is always the BBC Action Line. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, I hope you are happy. This is the happy ending. Keep safe and sound.